Hi, welcome to another episode of Thrive Extra Musician Podcast, a weekly podcast where we dive into the personal development as musicians to create a healthy living with mental clarity and vibrancy. I'm so excited to bring you this episode. It is our very first interview on this new podcast. I'm bringing you today's guest to discover topics on importance of having a creative outlet besides music and how to bring creativity and efficiency into your practicing room and tips on turning your hobbies, your passion into side business and better time management hacks and a lot more. So stay in tune. So welcome back to the show. Today's guest, she is a New York-based violinist with a graduate diploma in historical performance from the Juilliard School. As a Baroque violinist, she has been held as a fireworks soloist and has performed throughout the U.S. and internationally as a chamber musician, orchestra player, and soloist. She currently performs regularly in New York City and Westchester County. She turns her passion of cooking into actual business. As she started her blog, Hunger Musician, and attracted thousands of followers on her Instagram, she shares not only her food and music, but insights in practice and career building. Let's welcome today's guest, Sarah Jen Kenner.
Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to be talking about, you know, all of the different facets of what I do every day. Because yeah. I'm passionate about music and I'm passionate about food, and I'm really glad to be talking about them both.
I know. That's why I need to get you on the show because, you know, I'm so into cooking. As you saw on my other Instagram, I just really, you know, sometimes post a lot of food pictures and stuff. I know right now, like, everyone trying to stay at home and we just really, you know, try to eat healthier. And can you tell me a little bit about, or just to the audience, about like how you started the food blog and what inspired you?
Yeah, totally. So I've been doing my blog, The Hungry Musician, for I would say about 7 years now, a little over 7 years. And it first started, I was a freshman in college and I didn't have my blog at that point, but, you know, I had just gotten to school. And, you know, I had all this freedom. So all I was doing all the time was practicing because that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to get better at the violin.
I know
I'm not alone in that, you know. So I was spending late nights in the practice room. I was spending all day in the practice room when I wasn't in class. And so at the end of that year, I started to feel really just not right. Like I was not feeling healthy. I was so tired. I had gained a lot of weight. Like I wasn't feeling my best. And I started to think, like, what's wrong? You know, and also on top of that, you know, I had put all this work in the practice room, but I didn't feel like the results I was getting on my instrument, they weren't in line with how much time I was putting in the practice room.
Yeah, so, like, we always don't really think about efficient practicing that much when we're younger.
Right. So, you know, something was wrong. So over that summer, I committed to learning how to eat better and also make that food delicious. So I had always loved to cook, right? Like as a little kid, I loved to cook. And I said, well, if I know how to cook all these delicious foods, why can't I learn how to make them but also make them healthy? So that was sort of the beginning of me starting to experiment more in the kitchen and get more comfortable with creating my own recipes. And then after a while, I was just talking about my cooking so much because I was enjoying it so much that my friends at school were like, you should start a blog. And at the time, like, you know, I had no intention of it becoming a business or becoming like a huge thing. But I was like, yeah, okay. So I started blogging about the recipes I was making. And then over the years, as Instagram started to become more of a thing, I was posting recipes there and building an audience there. The rest is kind of just history. Now, you know, my blog has sort of changed over the years in its purpose. And I feel like the purpose that it's serving now and that I want to help it to keep serving in the future is that I want to inspire musicians and creative people to channel their creativity in the kitchen and to cook in a way that fuels their body and you know, makes them feel good. That's not always necessarily, you know, what we think of as healthy food, but, you know, foods that are nourishing and like make you feel good, accomplished, creative. So that's sort of my whole thing.
Wow, that is amazing. You know, talk about being healthy. I can definitely relate to, like, I was that also undergrad, very unhealthy eater. Just think about practicing. And yeah, literally 6-7 hours and you don't feel that great. So I noticing that you really, really grew on social media. The part of the thing is challenging us is as musicians, sometimes we tend to feel like we should always do like, you know, a lot of playing. All the feed is like, you know, practicing every day, 100 days challenge. But then when you post a lot of food pictures, like my professor actually follows me. And so I get feel that judgment from myself. I'm like, oh, I post some food picture. It's like I didn't practicing, you know, hard enough. How do you find that common ground, like, you know, with cooking and the violin side?
So first of all, I think the feeling that you're describing is extremely common. And it's a feeling that I have personally felt before, you know, of the, well, I'm posting things other than music. Like, what are people going to think about this? And to that, you know, I have to say my whole thing with the cooking is that it feeds my, like literally it feeds my creativity as a musician. So my identity as a musician is not just limited to the work that I do on my instrument, but it's also the cooking that I do. And, you know, I like to do art and I, you know, I have so many hobbies that I like to do. And those are all part of who I am as a musician and as a person. I think that our field, because it conditions us to practice hard and, you know, it is so competitive in so many ways, we are conditioned to feel that we need to hide those things. Because if we do them publicly, people are going to say, oh, she's not serious, or, oh, he's not serious, they're not serious. I think that we're conditioned to feel that way, but it's totally not true. I think a lot of that comes from within us rather than actual judgment from other people. I just genuinely feel that musicians should not be afraid to show those other sides of themselves. And, you know, if what you want is to only be posting your playing and your practicing videos, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that either. If that is, you know, if just doing that, like totally like lights your soul on fire and that's what you want to post, then you should post that. But if you feel an urge to post something else and to, you know, capitalize on another side of yourself on social media, then I think that that will actually make you a better artist for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think sometimes we, like, as a human being, basically, like, we always have different interests. I don't know how you think about this statement. Like, I do think sometimes musicians need to have another hobby besides music.
I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, whatever makes you feel well-rounded, you in the general sense, so whoever is listening, whatever makes you feel like full, mm-hmm. that's what you should do. And, you know, I think that other hobbies definitely do help. And for me, I know, and maybe for you, I guess too, with cooking, it is not only something that contributes to our creativity, but it is also an escape in a way, you know, because as wonderful as it is having a creative career, we are creative people and we also have creative careers, right? They're kind of two separate things. The creative person cannot always just be satisfied by a creative career. And so I think sometimes it's helpful to separate from needing to feel creative on your instrument and getting that creativity from elsewhere. For me, a big way to do that is cooking.
It's almost like a self-care type of thing, you think?
Oh, absolutely. It's 100% a self-care thing. I mean, in so many ways, right? Because not only is cooking, you know, for many people, it's a way to just sort of turn your brain off and just like be in a creative mode. Maybe it's not that way for some people, but that's a big thing that I'm trying to help people with. It's also a self-care activity in that you're literally feeding yourself. You're literally sustaining your own body with something that you made with your own two hands. And I think that is so cool. Like, that's the thing we don't talk about with cooking that much, but
yeah, I don't know how you actually come up with all these recipes, because sometimes I feel like I was in the kitchen, my husband's asking me, oh, you know, I need a recipe so I can make it. I was like, but I don't really have a recipe. I just make it.
Right. Yeah, no, I totally know. And for me, I mean, I cook that way so much too, right? Like I'll just go into my fridge. I'll be like, oh, I have this, and I'll make this. And it'll just be like a spur of the moment decision. And I won't remember what the exact recipe was that I did. So the recipes that I put on my blog, I normally like take a little bit more time to actually like test it once or twice, because I want to make sure that if I put it out to the public, that they're going to get the same exact results.
Yeah. It's not like my husband's going to get mad. Like, oh, this person didn't write this instruction clear. Like,
right.
That happens twice, like in the kitchen madness right there.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think, like, you know, being creative in the kitchen, like, really helps for liberal thinking, like, in terms of you going to a practicing room, how you're looking at your own practicing, own playing, and how did that help you for your playing?
That's a really good question. So this isn't like something I've thought about specifically in that, you know, in terms of what skills translated over. But I do think that critical thinking and adapting are two big ones, right? Mm-hmm. Because when we're doing a recipe, let's say, and we were making a sauce and we taste it and it doesn't taste great, we're like, okay, what is wrong with it? Does it need more salt? Does it need more spices? Does it need whatever? And we have to make decisions based on, we have to identify what's not right and we have to make decisions. And the same thing goes with practicing, right? When we're, you know, we're playing a passage and it's like, something just doesn't sound right. Like I could play this yesterday. Why does it not sound right? And so then you have to practice slowly, you have to break it down, you have to play in rhythms, and then you have to identify, it's like tasting, right?
The very, very great analogy right there. Yes, definitely.
And so then you have to adapt as you go, and then that's where adapting comes in. You have to sort of shift gears and do something a little differently that you weren't necessarily expecting, because it will be in service of a better result. So for cooking, that might be adding the salt, or adding some liquid to thin it out. With practicing, it might be, you know, I'm going to play this part in a different part of the bow, or I need to play this part softer. I don't know.
I think sometimes like cooking actually is testing you to be responding like immediately, because things happening in the moment, right? And so maybe for performance too, like, you know, during the performance, something going to happen and you have to add some salt.
Exactly. And, you know, I made the analogy to practicing, but it also very much applies to performance too, you know, where we have to be constantly alert and thinking of how we're going to adapt in real time. And I think that cooking is very much that way as well. You know, because if something's burning and you don't do something to save it, dinner's ruined. I think that the skills are very much connected. But another way that I really do feel that it helped me overall to just be a better player is that, and it might seem kind of backwards, but because I was practicing less, you know, I was spending more time on myself, right? Like I when I was in college and I made this choice to have a better lifestyle, I was spending more time cooking. I was spending more time planning my meals. I was spending more time exercising. I was making more time just for myself. Like I was prioritizing my self-care, and I was spending less time in the practice room, but I was actually getting better faster, because I think I was utilizing, I was utilizing my practice time much more efficiently. And it was forcing me, because I was not spending 6 or 7 hours a day in the practice room, to be like, well then, okay, how can I use these 2 to 3 hours, or on some days 1 to 2 hours, or less than an hour? You know, you never know how much time you're going to have to practice on a given day. And it really forced me to think, how can I use that time to really, really make a difference and really advance my playing?
Yes. Definitely. I think that's something we have to think about, like as a student at school for me, but I don't really get like, you know, private lessons anymore. So now I have to figure out everything myself. Like sometimes you don't trust yourself. Like, oh, am I doing this right? Then you start thinking, wow, you know, your professor has so much things to do, and then they only practice in like an hour or less than an hour. How they prepare for the concerts, right? And it's just really like how much you can actually get done in a short period of time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the whole idea of quantity over quality is really pushed on us as young musicians. Just in general, there's all of this conversation going on around, like, how many hours did you practice this week? And how much practicing did you do? And I really genuinely feel like the questions we should be asking, you know, our students, they want to, you know, really be making a difference in their playing faster, is what kind of practicing did you do this week?
Yeah, I want to mention this too, because I saw your hashtag leap into practice, right?
Yeah, it was really great. So just a little background on that. So I did 4 years ago, it was a leap year 4 years ago, like it was this year. And so I did a challenge in February called Leap Into Practicing. And at that time, 4 years ago, I was preparing for my Juilliard audition. So I wanted to kind of hold myself accountable by doing a practice challenge. And that particular challenge was geared towards practice journaling. So the idea was that every day I wrote in my practice journal and sort of reported on just my general reflection. Mm-hmm. But this year I was in the process of applying for an international competition and I was making an audition tape. And so I didn't have as much time as I normally would have liked. You know, it was one of those situations, like you were just saying, where, you know, we don't have that much time, but we have to put out a really good product. And I was thinking, how can I, you know, hold myself accountable and really think deeply about how I'm going to make this work. And so I decided to host another Leap Into Practicing challenge, and I called it Leap Into Practicing 2020. Again, it wasn't your normal practice challenge in that it wasn't about practicing every day. It was about doing something intentional every day in service of your final goals. So the first day was about setting those goals. And then the second day was about, you know, your intentions behind those goals. And then as it went on, you know, we covered topics like mental practicing. We covered topics about like practicing for performance. It's all saved on my Instagram. It was really fun. And like, you know, a bunch of people involved and they also did the challenge. And it, I think it was probably even more helpful for me than it was for them to actually like have to sit down and create a new thing every day. You know, there's so many ways to approach practicing that aren't just, you know, the ways that we normally think. So
what if some audience right now listening, they're like, I have a hobby that I really like that maybe can turn into a business. What do you think they can start with? I know some of my friends are so into like house plants, and I know that we're probably just having fun, but what if they want to turn it into like actual business? What do you think is most important for them to keep in mind?
Whatever it is that you want to do, I say just try it. And in terms of making an existing hobby into an aspect of your career in some way, I would say, first of all, to just come from a place of really genuinely loving it and enjoying it, because that energy will translate in what you're putting out. So if you really love knitting, for example, but you're also a cellist, I don't know, I'm just making an example, like show off the things you knit. And just be really excited about them, because you probably are really excited about them. Mm-hmm. And be just as genuine with your successes as you are with the things that don't go so great. You know, I'm the first one to say, like, if I mess up a recipe on Instagram, I'm the first one to be putting it in my story. Like, I'm just like, hey, guys, look how gross this looks. You know?
Well, yeah, that's... Actually, you know what? I really like how you're being vulnerable on social media. You know, of course, we all share like achievements on social medias, but sometimes we do make mistakes or we do have something that we didn't do quite well and we learn from it. And I like how you actually share things like that, things that you learn along the way.
Thank you so much. I mean, yeah, I really think that it's important, especially people who are very visible on platforms like Instagram, to have a level of vulnerability, because it really creates a sense of trust between you and the person you're talking to at the other end of the screen. And for me, I feel like for myself, it really just makes me feel like I'm not hiding anything, you know, like I'm just sort of putting it all out there. And if you like it, if you don't, you don't. So those are the first two things. One is just to be genuine with your excitement and just spread that excitement as far as you can. Two is to be a little vulnerable and like be open about you know, even the things that you feel like you're an expert at, you know, whether it's music or a hobby of some sort, be open with the fact that you're making mistakes too. And then the third thing I think is, and maybe this is more important than number two, actually, or equally as important too, is to connect with other people who are doing the kinds of things that you're doing. And this is something that has really helped me with my development on my social media platform to create relationships that are really meaningful. I follow all sorts of people on Instagram and I interact with so many people on Instagram, but, you know, connecting with people who are so uniquely like-minded. So like you've obviously, for example, like you're a violinist and you love food. And so when we connected, it, you know, there was like an instant like, oh, this person gets me. And, you know, we can vibe on these topics and all of that. But, you know, I've also connected with people who do like yoga for musicians because I really love yoga. So whatever is important to you, find those people who share those values, because that's what's really going to make social media meaningful for you and also help you build an audience. You know, as musicians, we're entrepreneurs, right? And if we're looking for the easiest way to further our career as an entrepreneur, we have to start with where we have the most influence. And so like, for instance, for me, that is Instagram. It is not Facebook. I am really bad with Facebook, like abysmal with Facebook. So that is something I'm working on. But, you know, I've been able to build a certain, you know, platform for myself without Facebook, or with the minimal use of Facebook. So there are so many ways to go about building a platform that aren't just necessarily on Instagram or even on social media.
Yeah, so I sometimes feel like social media can be a little bit toxic for people, and then some people just really addicted to look at social media all the time.
You know, I think what you said about social media being toxic sometimes is very true. And I think that a lot of the time that comes from us, you know, seeing something on our feed and it just doesn't feel good. See something that you're like, I don't necessarily feel like that goes with what I'm trying to, you know, fill my life with, like whatever it is, you know, I'm a huge advocate for keep whatever, you know, makes you feel good. Keep it in your feed. Whatever doesn't make you feel good, don't even think twice. Just get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, like we're on our phones so much, right? Like, especially now with the virus and everything, and everyone's stuck inside and we're on our phones probably more than ever. And, you know, we're constantly getting all this information. I think that it affects us probably more than we realize sometimes. Would you say?
Yeah.
Because we're just mindlessly scrolling and we don't always realize, we don't always like sit down to think like, is this making me feel good? Is this like, you know, inspiring me to do something creative, to do something good that helps other people? Like, are we actually like, is what we're looking at in our feed actually making us better, or is it making us not feel good?
Yeah, definitely. I think right now it's just really difficult for us because we don't really have any like a real human contact. And speaking about this new lifestyle that we have to stay at home more, and I noticed you had a post talking about how to be gentle on yourself and follow the intuition. And I know we've been talking about the time management, like how to practice more efficient and stuff. How we can be not only just gentle on ourselves, but like managing that all these things you have to do. I believe that you having a food blog and on the side of all these performance and stuff, it's going to be really overwhelming sometimes. Mm-hmm. Have you had that experience and how you kind of like overcome it?
Absolutely. I've had that experience. And I think that that is, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously right now it's a different story than it was 3 months ago. You know, 3 months ago, I was, you know, running from gigs to teaching to practicing to, you know, doing whatever. And then, you know, having to cook dinner somewhere in there. And I was finding it difficult to focus on my food blog with the amount of concentration that I wanted to focus on it. But what did help me and what does help me even now, you know, like even in lockdown, I've still had things that I have to do. Like my day has, you know, had some structure and I've had to sort of plan out like, how am I going to fit this in exactly where I want? So, a really good technique that I recommend is time blocking. And so
I would say,
yeah, it's magical, right?
Yes.
So great. Ever since I started doing it in college, like when I graduated college, I started, you know, time blocking. And what that means, if people aren't familiar with it, is you have where, you know, I have a calendar where it's laid out vertically, where, you know, I have, it's by the, you know, the half hour, right? And I can just kind of scan down the list and I can see like what's going on at this time, what's going on at this time, what's going on later tonight, what's going on later this week. I can look at it all laid out. People, I used to do it on Sundays. I would do the whole week. This was when I was in school and I had everything planned out for me basically, but now because things are much more fluid. So kind of just getting things out of your head and onto paper is a really good way. And I think a big thing that I found is that my first instinct is to say, I don't have time for this today, or I don't have time for this week. But if I really value doing that thing, I can find a way to make it happen. And the way I can find a way to make it happen is by sitting down and time blocking.
Yeah, definitely time blocking. But then we have to kind of be also wise about how much time we need. Sometimes I underestimate how much time I really need for each task.
Absolutely. And there is, you know, I found with time blocking, like I've sometimes run into traps where I'm like, I said I was going to get this done by 6:30 p.m. and now it's 7:30 and I'm not even close to done. And so the thing that I plan to do at 6:30 when I finish with that task is now going to have to be pushed. And I think that there is a great deal of flexibility that has to come with time blocking, which it seems like counterintuitive because it's like I'm laying out my schedule, like I'm supposed to follow it. Yes, I to a degree, but the whole point of time blocking is so that you, when you're planning it out, you know what needs to get done and you know basically how long it's going to take. And so you can better calibrate as you're doing it so that you won't get stuck just doing one thing for the whole day. And then it's 9 p.m. and you're like, oh my God, I had three other things I had to do. So that's how it helps me.
And probably be kind to yourself if you don't really finish it. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, being kind to yourself, especially right now, you know, there's so much going on and life doesn't look like it did for a lot of people. And so, you know, just do the best that you can and realize that nothing in life is perfect. And so all you can do is just, you know, give your best effort and attempt to get everything done and attempt to lay it out in a way that's helpful for you. And if it doesn't work, you know, recalibrate and move on.
Yeah.
You still have tomorrow to work on everything and the day after. Well, this is definitely an amazing conversation with you. I hope my listeners also get a lot from our conversations. Now, towards the end of the show, I have some quick questions for you.
Five quick questions. So are you ready?
I'm ready. Hit me.
Okay. So what's your favorite book recently you've been reading?
My favorite book recently. So I picked up a book a couple months ago called, forget exactly what it's called. It's a collection of the best American food essays from, I think it's 2018. It's by Ruth Reichel put it together. There are some really excellent essays in there about food. And, you know, it's not just about food. Like it's about, you know, food as it affects our, you know, socioeconomic climate and, you know, how it's really fascinating. Like some really, really, really neat and like thought-provoking stuff in there.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting book. So let's go on to the next one. So what's your favorite quote or one of the mantra that you live by?
I think what we talked about just now with, you know, perfection and all that, I know it seems like very cliche, but I think that the saying nobody's perfect really resonates with me on so many levels. And it encourages me to be kinder to myself and to be kinder to others. And to also to realize that, you know, as a classical musician where, you know, perfection is put up on this pedestal, right? Literally nobody's perfect. And so I shouldn't have to worry about being perfect either. And then that translates into so many other aspects of my life as well.
Yes. I just want to say this quote is perfect, but I'm like, yes. Yeah. Well, there's a little trap right there. It's like perfect. But definitely, I think musicians sometimes really hard on ourselves. Whenever we have performance, we're like, oh no, it's not perfect, but now I actually changed. When I finish a performance, I'm like, yeah, there's a little mistake, but next time will be better. After the quote, let's talk about what's your favorite piece of music right now you're playing.
My favorite piece of music. So a piece that's really been resonating with me, no pun intended, is the Bieber Passacaglia, which I know it's like the quintessential Baroque violin piece. Like I could have picked something more creative than that, but you know, I played it. I did like a virtual recital, right? When New York was starting to go into lockdown and, you know, things were kind of out of the woods now, but this was right when things were like really bad. And you know, the subtitle of that, it's the final installment in the Bieber Mystery Sonatas, and it's called The Guardian Angel. That's the subtitle. And so, and there's something about it, because it's the only mystery sonata that's unaccompanied. It's not even really a sonata, it's just a passacaglia. And so there's something about it that's just very introspective, that is mournful but also very hopeful. And I think that sort of encapsulates all the feelings that I personally am feeling at this stage, my career and my life, just because of what's going on around us. And so that piece, I've been feeling very close to it recently.
I love it. I like those deep feelings. Well, so next one, what's your current favorite dish?
Ooh, my current favorite dish. Does sourdough bread count?
Sure. I just made 2 loaves today.
Like it just really? Baked it.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm out. So I made 2 loaves instead of 1. I love it.
Yes. Oh man, I would love some fresh bread right now. So yeah, sourdough bread, but also I think I've really been loving shakshuka recently. Ooh. It's a North African dish, and it's also found a lot in the Middle East. And it's a tomato dish, which is basically just poached eggs in tomato sauce.
Oh. Yeah, I saw a video on that. It was looking really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I posted a recipe on my blog recently for it too. But there's so many recipes out there that you can find, and it's really good for dipping bread in. So just so you know.
Perfect combo, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very comforting. So I think that's why I've been enjoying it.
Nice. Now, last one. One thing you think that today's listener can take away from our episode, from you?
I think the one thing that whoever is listening can take away from this is that there are so many ways to have a fulfilling career. And you should trust your instinct. If you feel that there's a way that you want your career to be more expressive of who you are, do not be afraid to just do it unapologetically, do it enthusiastically, because it will make you feel like a more well-rounded musician if you just go for it.
Amazing. Well, you guys hear it. Courage. Basically, just go Absolutely. For it. Yes. If you think things are right, just go for it. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Really, thank you. It's been so really, much fun. Really.
And it's just, yeah, it's been an amazing conversation with you. And tell me how listeners can find you and get connected with you.
Sure. So on Instagram, I am at Hungry Musician. I also have a website, which is thehungrymusician.com. If you follow me on my website, you'll mostly get recipes. I'm trying to do a little bit more posting about music on there. My music website, where you can find more of my musical projects, that is SJK. So S as in Sarah, J as in Jane, K as in Kenner, sjkviolin.com. And on my Instagram, you'll find both. So you'll find, you know, my musical projects and you'll find my recipes. At Hungry Musician on Instagram, you'll get the best of both worlds.
That is amazing. So thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I hope you really enjoyed today's episode, and I'd like to thank our guest Sarah again for joining us today. Go check out her Instagram and her Hungry Musician blog, and this weekend, cook something nice for yourself, for your family, and always remember to go for your dream and passion. Be sure to check out our blog post for this episode at amywonviolin.com/podcast and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or whatever podcast platform you use. If you learned anything from today's podcast, please leave a review and share it with your friends. And also download this episode. It will really help this podcast to grow. And if you have any questions, topics you'd like me to cover in the future, email me at thrivexdrive@gmail.com. Thanks again. See you next week.